Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Open Grapevine Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Gail, and I'm an alcoholic. I am your host for the month of May. The AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meetings every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms, on aagrapevine.org, and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We're glad you're here, especially newcomers. If you are new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with AA members will help you find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. And today's Grapevine Daily quote is, "It has been the actions of others that has given me unfailing support throughout my sobriety. It also shows how I am to respond to those whom I can help. I am responsible to see that the hand of AA is available to anyone." And that's from Moreno Valley, California, December 1992. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at aagrapevine.org, or you will find it on the AA Grapevine app every morning. And an excerpt from the May issue of the Grapevine magazine, and I chose page 32, an article called "Let There Be Light." "When I completed step five, I realized I had spent much of my life in that space in my head where my diseased thinking was in charge." And then completing the fifth step turned on the overhead light. Suddenly, instead of despair, I now had possibilities and choices. So that's on pages 32 and 33 of the May Grapevine. And a short reading from the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, because the step five was the theme, I chose chapter six, Into Action. "Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. These are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter." So this will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. We often hear it is best to try and identify with the speaker rather than compare your story with theirs. And I'm happy to introduce our first speaker, my new friend, Casey. Over to you.
Thank you, Gail. My name is Casey. I am an alcoholic. I'm very grateful to be here today and to have the opportunity to share. I hope that my higher power is on deck and ready to use me as a channel for the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous since November 9th of 2006. I haven't had to drink since I got sober. And I've been free of all drugs and alcohol since then. And I think for me, it's important to share that relapse is not a requirement to sobriety or membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's also not a disqualifier. I'm not saying that in any kind of like arrogant, I've achieved something kind of way. I just think it's really important to know that when I stopped drinking, I didn't have to start again. If I stuck with Alcoholics Anonymous and took suggestions from you guys, I can live a life free from the suffering caused by the disease of alcoholism. I still have the disease of alcoholism, and I have to work actively to keep it recovered, but I don't have to suffer from it anymore. I was 25 when I got sober. I'll save the math. I'll turn 45 next month. Nearly half my life has been spent in sobriety, which is mind-blowing to me. I don't know how that has happened. I know that I can identify things that have worked really well. When I got sober, just a little bit of what it was like, because those details, I don't think they're not as important as just knowing that I suffered from the disease of alcoholism. My story was really boring. The most trouble that I ever got in was with the Forest Service, and it wasn't even for drinking. It was because the people I was drinking with littered in a public place and left their bills with their names on it on the trash in the fire, and they tracked us down and we got in trouble for littering and then found out we were drinking. So that was the big scary part of getting in trouble. What was more scary is all the times I didn't get in trouble, all the times that I consumed alcohol and got in the car and drove, and don't know how I got from one place to the other. The spiritual bankruptcy that happened, sitting in a lot of dark bedrooms, usually on the floor, because I often found myself not deserving of sitting on a couch or a bed. I was very, did a lot of self-punishment. Like, I just wasn't good enough. So I would do things like sit in a home and turn the heat off because I thought maybe I deserved to freeze to death, or, you know, just really kind of twisted thinking. Drinking was my way to escape from that. And then drinking stopped working. And I didn't even comprehend that it had not stopped working. It was still my friend, and alcoholism is such a cunning liar. The way that it can come into my space and talk to me in a way that seems like such a dear friend or a comforting ally, and that's what I thought was happening when I had a revolver and wanted to take my own life, when I was experiencing spiritual bankruptcy and couldn't see a way out. I really didn't know that it was with or without drinking. I just didn't have a lot of self-awareness. And I had a friend who got sober that I worked with, and he started behaving differently and doing really weird things, like talking about God when he had wanted nothing to do with God. And all of a sudden God would start cropping up in these conversations. And I noticed him have a better relationship with his son, and he became a better coworker. And I was so glad that he had found something that made him a better person. I didn't recognize that he had found a solution that would work for me 22. And a night came when I couldn't look in the mirror anymore. I was disgusted with the behavior that I had been confronted with. And of all of the things that I had tried, taking my own life was the last thing that I was like, that's it. I'm done. I don't deserve to consume the same space as other humans on this planet. And there was some creeping notion that came into my head. Maybe I'll go see, maybe I'll just go talk to my friend and see about trying whatever it is he's tried. I know he was doing it for his alcoholism, but maybe they'll take me too. And so I went over to his house and listed my litany of problems that I had. And I very much enjoyed smoking pot. It was one of my favorite things ever. And in all of the things that he had shared about solution, I said, well, that sounds really great. Yeah, I can see the consequences from alcoholism. I can see, or from alcohol. I can see where I've drank too much, or I've blacked out, or I've driven drunk, or I've been in places I don't remember. But there's no consequences to smoking pot, just eating too many brownies or Cheetos. So I don't have to stop doing that, right? I was really hung up on this, like, all or nothing thinking before I walked in the door. And there was somebody who was listening to our conversation in the other room and came into the room that we were in and said, you know, I've just overheard what you've said. And I just want you to know, you don't have to stop anything. There's no requirement to walk into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. When you walk in, you don't even have to be sober. You don't have to quit smoking pot. You don't have to quit drinking. You don't have to even really want to be there. But if you're interested in the solution that we have, maybe check it out. Go to 3 meetings a week for a month. And if nothing's better after that month is over, pick up where you are right now. We're not going to hold you back. Nobody's going to keep you in the room or make you stay or tell you have to do anything. And I was like, great, I don't have to quit smoking pot. Perfect, I'll go. That's the one thing that I heard. But it was such an important message for me to understand that I could walk in the door of Alcoholics Anonymous without any obligation to Alcoholics Anonymous or anybody in that room. I could just go and I could just see. I could just see if there was something there that looked better than a bullet. So that's what I did. High and drunk, I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was on November 8th of 2006. And there was something powerful enough in that room that even without total clarity of what was happening, I wanted to go back and try it sober. So the next morning I woke up and dug my heels in because, man, I had all sorts of delightful little things around me in my apartment that I usually consumed first thing in the morning. And I didn't. I thought, I'll try it. I'll try it this one time and just see. So I didn't drink and I didn't use. And I clung on to that day with all of the sheer will and determination I could muster until I got to a meeting that night. And that was November 9th. And when I was there, they said, well, don't drink in between meetings. And I said, okay, there were no requirements. I was told I didn't have to do it. This is, do you know how long it is till the next meeting? And they said, yeah, there's one at 8 in the morning. I thought it was until 7 p.m. the next night. No, 8 in the morning. So that's it. Don't drink in between meetings. That's the first direction I took. So I went to my next meeting as soon as I could get to it. And then 90 meetings in 90 days, I think, is this excellent suggestion. I went to, I think, maybe 300 meetings or more in the first 90 days, because not drinking between meetings is an absolutely ridiculous request. But if those meetings are closer together, it's a little bit easier to do. So I didn't drink in between meetings. And then I got a sponsor. And then she suggested that we start going through the steps. And I'll tell you a secret. We did not open the big book when we did the steps. I know that's totally wild. We opened the 12 steps and 12 traditions and we went through them and we went through them pretty quickly. We did end up going through the big book later, but I worked the steps for the first time out of the 12 and 12 and it still worked. So I'm sharing that too, because we have all of these terrific suggestions in Alcoholics Anonymous, but there are no rules and there's no one perfect way that I have found that helps me achieve sobriety. If I am open to the suggestions and willing to do the work that somebody asks me to do, I get results. And when I start to know more or learn better, I do better. And that's achieved through a lot of different ways. So I worked with a sponsor. We did the steps together. And then I got introduced to service work, which I know isn't everybody's cup of tea, but man, if you ask me, it's the frosting on the cake. Service work is the thing that has kept me tethered to Alcoholics Anonymous when it seems like everything else has failed. Having a commitment and an obligation to show up and be of use to somebody else is the best thing for my ego. The best thing. And my ego is pretty clever and it will try and take me out. That alcoholism, that cunning, baffling disease, it's not dead. It hasn't gone anywhere. It finds all these clever nooks and crannies, you know, and today in sobriety, after 19 years, the way it shows up is, gosh, you're pretty busy. It's okay if you miss a meeting this week. You're pretty busy. It's understandable that you forgot to pray and meditate this morning. Gosh, you are a really terrible driver today. You should really beat yourself up for that. My alcoholism talks to me in ways that are defeating and cunning and baffling and powerful. And the only difference I think between me and a brand new newcomer today is that I have the opportunity to have put these together where I have more practice at identifying what that voice looks like today. When I was new, I had no idea. I didn't have steps, traditions, concepts. I hadn't hardly worked with a sponsor yet. That early time in sobriety is painful and hard. And I think maybe more than a coin, there should be some other celebration for making it 30 days in sobriety, because that's a lot of time not drinking without all of the tools that I've gotten to acquire in my sobriety life today. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me how any of us make it past 30 days. It seems like a tall order, but I really believe there's magic in this program, and it's walking shoulder to shoulder with other alcoholics and being willing to be humble and take direction and try new things and to constantly work at enlarging my spiritual life and my spiritual condition. And I think I'm close to time, so I'm going to just share this last thing here. There's my husband and I have been making a lot of big transitions in our life lately. I've gotten to change jobs and get to have a job of my dreams today. I didn't even know it was a dream. We moved across the country from Montana to New Jersey, a big trip. We've been living out of suitcases and hotels and Airbnbs since March. There's been a lot of transition. And up until maybe even a week ago, it's been so delightful. And I've really felt connected to my higher power and to my AA community, remembering to pray and take action and leave the results up to God. But something in the last week, there's been this disruption in routine, and it's really started to, I've started to notice it affects me in a way that it has been very subtle. And the reason I'm sharing this is because I think long-term sobriety doesn't keep me any more immune from the next drink than anything else. The book says it's a daily reprieve, and it really is. Every day I have to invest in my sobriety, and that includes a personal investment, me with my higher power, and whatever that is for anyone. My higher power, I often say, is the universe, because it's the largest thing that I can fathom. And not resting on laurels, that service work, as much as I love it, is not the only part of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sponsorship, sponsoring women, all of these terrific things that helped me so much in my sobriety. I don't know which one of those things is the thing that keeps me sober. I don't want to find out, but I'll tell you that that losing, somebody said it well in a meeting last night. We say faith without works is dead, but work without faith is unproductive. And if I'm working in Alcoholics Anonymous without investing in my faith and my relationship with a higher power, it's going to yield the same results as faith without works. So it's important, no matter how long I'm sober, hopefully it will be forever, but I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. And I don't know what a relapse looks like for me. It's terrifying to think of what a relapse would look like today. And any of those little slips before the slip, I want to prevent that. So recognizing things like a disruption in schedule or a disruption in routine and how that might affect my spiritual condition today is super, super important. And this is a good time for me to double down and be a newcomer, be willing to be humble and do all the things that I did when I was new in sobriety, get to more meetings, pray every day, talk to my sponsor, pick up the phone. All of those things are just absolutely essential. So I'm so grateful for my sobriety today. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to share. I hope something was said that might help someone who's been new or who is new or been struggling and going at it alone. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Casey. Oh my goodness, I'm so glad I know you. Thank you for accepting this loving invitation. I know a little bit more about you now. And just before we move on to the next speaker, my friend Pauline, there's a couple of announcements. So the seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. You can find it on AA.org. Grapevine does not accept direct contributions, but of course we do have expenses. The best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagrapevine.org. You can subscribe to AA by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you're supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can also visit the Grapevine online store at, guess where? aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message product allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit, guess where, aagrapevine.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Happy Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available at no cost to you on all podcast platforms and on aagrapevine.org. Check out Our Primary Purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. For all podcast, be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch all episodes. Please follow Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube as well. So our next speaker is my dear friend, Pauline, and I have trudged this road together for a really long time, and I'm grateful you accepted the invitation. Pauline, over to you.
Thank you, Gail. I'm Pauline, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 15th, 1990, and my home group is Capilano Group in North Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So wonderful to be here and to see you, Gail, and to meet you, Casey. A little bit about me. I'm born and raised in England, in Liverpool, where drinking was a way of life. You know, it seems everybody drank, everybody got drunk every weekend, and nobody drank at home. They drank in the pubs, and there was a pub on every corner. And in my day, there was no drinking age, really. So I don't remember my first drink. Most alcoholics do and remember the effect. I don't. All I know is I blended in when somebody told me I could have a drink. And I remember whenever I did drink, I got drunk. You know, I believe I was an alcoholic from day one. And for many years, I had a lot of fun. And, you know, I was intermittent, a binge drinker, I guess I was. And I went into nursing. And I tell you that simply because my story wouldn't make sense if I didn't. And so I went, and we had to live in the nurse's home, which was a huge house with lots of nurses, a lot of fun. And people would phone to ask girls to go to parties from there. If they were short of women, they'd phone the nurse's home. And of course, I was there. I'll go, you know, along with my two alcoholic friends. And our curfew was at 10 o'clock at night. And we would sort of be staggering home around midnight and up the fire escape and in through the windows and, you know, lots of trouble. And I left nursing halfway through to drink, basically, and then decided I didn't like the job I was doing on the outside. So I crawled back to nursing again and back to the nurse's home. I got married. Which also slowed my drinking down. I married a man who didn't drink very much, and we emigrated to Canada. And we didn't know anybody here, really, and we didn't have any money. So there again, I couldn't drink, but I was always, always restless, irritable, and discontented. And I didn't know why. I had this high anxiety, and it was drinking kept a lid on that, I would say, you know. Anyway, we went up north to a place called Kitimat in the middle of nowhere. Keeping in mind, I'd come from Liverpool, a huge city, to Kitimat, meaning land of snow, and a catalogue shop, and that was it. No, and that my husband told me that they didn't allow women in the pub in Kitimat, and I bought that. So I was really, really restless, irritable, and discontented. And I had a six-week-old baby by this time. So anyway, we went on from there, and I had no tools whatsoever. I didn't ever know to take a look at myself. That was not in my psyche. You know, it just wasn't. I remember my sister, I'm the youngest of two girls, and my sister talking about her part in a particular incident. And I thought, where did you learn that? I didn't know about that, you know. So I missed the boat. I guess I wasn't teachable. So I went on to, for my unhappiness, I blamed everything and everybody outside of myself, including my husband, and we separated. And I went on then to drink with alcoholic men who could buy my drinks. And somehow, some way, I crossed that invisible line and I became a daily drinker. And my world became very small, you know. I had a job, I had a car, and I had a house. So I thought I was okay. And I would come out of work. By this time, I was a district nurse. I'd come out of work straight to the liquor store, two bottles of wine, one for the car, one for the house. And I would drink the one in the house and go out and get the one in the car that I wasn't going to drink that night. And that was my ritual every night for 10 years. That's what I did. I drank till I passed out. And by this time, I knew I was an alcoholic. My father had died of this disease, and I had watched him very rapidly decline after he retired. And I felt that I was going exactly the same way, quite rapidly downhill. So for some reason, I couldn't ask for help. I thought I could do it by myself. And every day I would say, I'm not going to drink today. And every day I had this obsession to go to the liquor store. And then one day I came back to the office where I was working to pick up my work for the next day. And these two women in our office, and we used to get salespeople coming in wanting us to try different dressings and things. And I thought, I wonder what they're selling. You know, I haven't got time for this. I need to get out of here. And I know now these two women were from the cooperation with the professional community. And they come to our office to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to us for our patients. Full-blown alcoholics sitting right in front of them. And they just told their story. They just stood in our office and told their story. And I completely identified with the alcoholic woman and somewhat with the Al-Anon as well. And I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd never been exposed to it. And for some reason, I thought it was all men. Where I got that idea, I've got no clue. Anyway, she was funny. She was well-dressed. She was articulate. And I thought, well, I can go where she goes. So I went over and talked to her afterwards, and she had some pamphlets, picked up some pamphlets, by the way, for my patients, and took them home. And didn't do anything about anything for about 6 months. And then I picked up one of those pamphlets, and on the back was the phone number for AA. So I again didn't know anything about anything. And eventually, one day, I decided to make that phone call. And they were absolutely lovely, very non-judgmental, you know. I was whispering, I think I'm an alcoholic with nobody in the house. The shame of it was tragic, really. And so they gave me a few meetings that I could go to. There again, I didn't do very much about anything for about another 6 months. And then one day, I just decided I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I, the biggest dilemma was, what do I wear? And how do I look all together to go to an AA meeting, my first AA meeting? So I got all decked out and I went, and it was a huge meeting. And I walked in and sat on the back row of all men. And I looked ahead and there were all these old women. And I just thought, well-dressed together, you know, a lot of them. And I just thought, I'm in the wrong room. This is a church. These are church people. And I immediately didn't like anybody in the room, you know. Anyway, at halftime, they asked, were there any newcomers in the room? And I believe it was God-given. I stood up and said, this is my first meeting. And everybody clapped and turned around and looked at me, hundreds of people. And, you know, they say, you know, you get to burn the house down and you get a standing ovation and a big book. So I thought that was very odd. But anyway, at the end of the meeting, the man sitting next to me said, that was very brave of you to do that. And I felt like a little kid and said, thank you. And he took me by the hand to meet these women. And I, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was talk to these women. But anyway, they invited me to their step meeting. And I didn't know how to say no, and I had no life. So I said, yes, I'd go. So they picked me up and they took me to their step meeting, and they rotated through houses, you know, and this was in West Vancouver. And I know today they did step one for me, and there were 14 women with long-term sobriety. How lucky was I to be parachuted into this group of women? And they told their story. And one woman talked about having blackouts, and I had blackouts. And they talked about things that I'd done, you know. And I felt like I'd come home. I felt like I fit somewhere for the first time in my life. You know, what a relief to be able to talk about my alcoholism, which was my big secret, I thought, you know. So I made a point of working my schedule around that meeting, and I used to go to that meeting every week. I chose a sponsor from that group, and she had two qualifications. One, she was from the north of England, where I'm from, and two, she was hilarious, and that was it. And I since found later that she told me she was drinking. So I then had to choose another sponsor. And I chose somebody who was the exact opposite to me. She was gentle. She was kind. She was loving. And, you know, I'd rant on about the latest boyfriend, what he had done to me. And she'd say, now, what would be the loving thing to do? Now, that was never in my psyche. Never a thought like that crossed my mind. And she softened me over time. You know, she'd say things like, forgive everybody everything. You know, your story is your gift. You know, when it came to the promises, I couldn't get past, we shall not regret the past. You know, I was a mother, you know, and she kept saying to me, your story is your gift to help others, you know. And even, you know, our co-founder talks about we have been endowed with the power to perform miracles, you know. And today I know that if I hadn't heard those women's stories, I would not be here. If I'd have just heard, you know, recovery from the podium, I would not be here today. I know that. I had to identify with the stories. So I went on to, I joined the group because I thought I had to in order to come back. So that was easy. And then my service that started right there and then, my group had teams. There were five teams, and I was put on team four. And that was a team that opened the meeting, closed the meeting, you know, made the coffee, was the greeters. And there were five people on each team with what they called a captain, somebody with long-term sobriety who guided us through that. So a very good way to grab the newcomer. And I felt like I belonged right away because I was on team four. I kept saying, you know, what team are you? I'm on team four. so it was a big deal. I then went on to be the secretary, which is probably the most life-changing experience of my whole life in AA. And that was because for 3 years, I had joined a podium meeting and I did not speak from the podium. And there I was having to sit in front of the group for 6 months and make announcements and things like that. And it really, really changed my life. You know, I had a friend who was a GSR, and she told me that she traveled all over the place in BC and the Yukon, and the group paid for it. And I said, I want to do that. How do you do that? So what have I got to do that? So I went to my business meeting and asked if I could be the GSR. And they were delighted. They hadn't had a GSR in a long time. And so I had no clue what I was going to be doing or what the job was about or anything. All I knew, I was going to travel and have fun. And anyway, an old man came over to me and he said, you know, you are in for one hell of a ride. And I had no idea what he was talking about. Anyway, when I went to my first assembly, which was in Duncan on Vancouver Island, I was blown away by hundreds of people spending a whole weekend doing the business of AA. And the magnitude outside my group, I had no idea, you know. So, you know, that also was life-changing for me. And how am I doing for time? I went on to... Now I'm the archivist of BC Yukon, and that is such a privilege. And I'll just close with, I got to speak on a panel at the International, which was the privilege of my life. And I spoke on the history of BC and the Yukon. And part of our history is that a man came from Sacramento to British Columbia to 12-step our first sober alcoholic in BC. And we had no information on this man. His name was Roland. And all we knew that somebody sent him up here to start AA in BC, and that was in 1944. And after my talk, a man came over to me and said, "Hello, I'm from Sacramento, and I have a whole history on Roland, you know." So, and he had written about his Vancouver experience, and you know, and it's like our bottle book. They have a book down there with Roland's Vancouver experience. So, what an honor, what a coincidence, and what a privilege. Thank you, Gail, for asking me to share.
Thank you so much, Pauline. That was fabulous. As you were talking about traveling all over, I was remembering one of the assemblies we were at where your room didn't have a hair dryer.
Oh, right.
There are such
disaster.
We could write a book. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. Thank you, Casey, as well. Honestly, you guys are just the cat's pajamas. Thank you. Please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it's also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with the professional community or public information work. It's so important. And this is such an easy way, a webinar, to come in and learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. So with that, I would like to invite Casey to close our meeting, please, with a prayer of her choice.
Thank you, Gail. The third step prayer has been especially important to me in my sobriety, but especially recently, just like I had shared that, you know, being in a place of a humble newcomer, I think the third step prayer does that for me. So selfishly and hopefully to the benefit of others, I'd like to use that prayer to close. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
Thank you so much. Thank you, all of you. And thank you, Chris, for giving me this opportunity to invite fantastic speakers to share with us.